Hello, it is 9:09 a.m. and guess what, Ben?
We're not alone in the studio. We have Val from Scorpio Books.
Hello.
How's it going?
Wonderful, thank you very much.
Oh, that's okay. So, what are we talking about today? We were so busy talking about other stuff.
September is just a crazy, exciting month for books.
Oh, it sure is.
Actually, I was going to start by saying that this week, the Women's Prize for Fiction was announced in the UK.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, huge prize. And Maggie O'Farrell won for her beautiful novel, Hamnet.
Which we've talked about before.
We were so excited at Scorpio because she wasn't on the book along list and none of us could understand why. We all really had our fingers crossed for her. So that was awesome news. If you haven't read it yet, you must because it's a really fabulous
read.
And
if you go to the RDU website, you can probably find a podcast on there. You can hear a little bit about it, you know, just saying.
Shameless.
Totally shameless. But anyway, back on track. So today I want to talk about Sorrow and Bliss, which is the second novel by Meg Mason, who... she lives in Sydney. She's an Australian writer, but I think I heard somewhere that there was some sort of Kiwi connection. So I must follow that up. Anyway, it was published this month. Trigger warnings. It's a book that deals with suicide and depression. Mm-hmm. But it is the funniest book I have ever read about mental illness in my life. I laughed out loud so many times, like every few pages in the first half of this book. And I think that books like that are so rare that when you come across them, you just need to shout about them because it's so nice to have something to laugh about. Even when, or maybe especially when it's dark material, I think it's excellent. Such an undervalued skill, isn't it?
Being able to write
comedy.
Yeah, because I mean, sometimes like you read really depressing ones and you're like, whew, I like don't even want to.
And you just want to get out of it.
Yeah.
It's just suffocating.
But when they add those spots
of humor, you just
can't
get enough of it.
Yeah. Definitely.
So I don't think this should be written off as a light read just because it's funny. it's a black comedy and it really packs a punch. So it's set nowish in London and Oxford, and it's about a woman called Martha in her late 30s who writes a funny food column for a posh English supermarket. And she knows there's something wrong with her, but she doesn't know what it is. And her husband, Patrick, thinks she's fine. He says everyone has something. The key is to just crack on with it, you know, attack the day and just get on with it. So British. and probably a bit stoic Kiwi too.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Martha can't keep going because since a precise moment when she was 17, she's had these episodes of extreme mental and physical dysfunction. So these episodes often arrive without warning or reason. They can be quick bursts, or she might spend days where she can't get up off the bathroom floor, or weeks in bed. And sometimes the episodes present as depression, sometimes as mania, sometimes as splitting headaches or chronic fatigue, or other times just plain rudeness. So she's seen an endless stream of doctors, and she's taken three of every drug on offer, but nothing's worked, and eventually she and the closest to her just decide that she's sensitive and difficult and hard work and unable to grow up.
Oh, wow.
So for that reason, Martha has told Patrick before they got married that she didn't want to have children, and he said he didn't either because he's been in love with her forever and that's all that matters. But surprise, it becomes an issue for both of them as the novel goes on and everything blows apart. So the novel is about whether Martha can survive her journey to diagnosis and which relationships will remain standing at the end.
Mm.
So she's a really fascinatingly complex and charming character, even when she's behaving abominably. She's intensely clever and fierce and really vulnerable at the same time.
Yeah.
And she has this fantastically wry, absurd sense of humour. So she's someone who burns very bright and draws people to her quickly, but then is also completely maddening in the way she hurts other people and herself. A lot like Phoebe Waller-Bridge, you know, UK.
Oh, yeah, a lot like that.
And we feel that frustration even as readers because we're quickly brought under her spell. And then feel confused and alarmed when she falls apart so dramatically. And we're also not quite sure how reliable a narrator is. how reliable a narrator she is.
Yes.
So whether we can trust the story that she's telling us. So she doesn't sugarcoat it. She's amazingly honest.
Mm.
And it's written in this very intimate, confessional style. Makes you feel like you're chatting with an old friend.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
Yeah, but we get the sense that there's a piece missing and it's one that she's fiercely protective of.
Yeah.
So, of course, we want to desperately read on and find out what that is.
Yeah,
you've
got to know, yeah.
But the best thing about this novel is the gorgeous cast of secondary characters from her hilariously flawed family. There's Martha's very witty and prolifically pregnant sister, her eccentric bohemian mother, who's a sculptor of minor importance in the art world, who drinks too much and is awful to everyone.
I love that.
Yeah. Her doting but bewildered father, who's a failed poet and who she describes as looking like someone who should be driving a mobile library. Her wealthy aunt, Winsome, the frustrated pianist, and her obnoxious husband, who drives the twatmobile. There's also Martha's flamboyant benefactor, Peregrine, who loans her his apartment in Paris so she can recover from her first marriage, you know, as you do.
As one does,
as
you know.
As one does.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Then there's Patrick, her devoted, delightfully awkward, long-suffering second husband, whose loyalty, she believes, is actually just PTSD resulting from boarding school syndrome. So, all these large personalities just give the novel a delicious richness, and there's such sport to be had in the way these characters bounce off each other and rile each other up. It's just a madcap celebration of the dysfunctional family that somehow continues to function despite the odds.
Mm.
And these characters also stop the book from being weighed down by its darkness.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Just give that much needed levity when Martha is so despairing of her condition and its consequences, and she's just tormented by self-loathing and shame and it's all a bit dreadful.
Yes.
Anyway, but this is an addictive read. The writing is energetic and spiky but full of pathos. The pacing and plotting are tight, so we skip along from one scene to the next, which makes it very hard to put down. And although it sounds a bit like a confection, there are really profound descriptions of mental illness in here, and particularly the female experience of mental illness.
Yeah.
There's one particular image I loved. Martha likens her mental state to the weather in the Hebrides, where there's cyclones, torrential storms and hurricanes that are unpredictable and devastating and make it very hard to live a normal life.
Mm.
So like bad weather, there's no way around her condition and there's often no predicting it. You just have to deal with it the best you can when it happens. Yeah, and another thing I thought she did amazingly well was show how bad behaviour or mental illness can become invisible in families or within a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So how out of love for someone or out of habit or, you know, just so we can all get through Christmas lunch, behaviour that would ring alarm bells from anyone else becomes normalised in our loved ones and
definitely.
Their madness or sadness.
So that's
badness.
Just them.
It's just them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they all have their challenges in this family. And undesirable qualities, and the family bends to absorb and accommodate them, but Martha's tips the balance.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
So this is like, it's Nora Ephron meets Fleabag. It's for anyone who liked Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine or The Rosie Project.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys know that one?
Heard of it, yeah.
It's kind of like Sylvia Plath's The Bell Jar meets Bridget Jones.
Oh, wow, very cool.
So it's, very cool. Anyone who liked Lena Dunham's Girls or other female coming-of-age stories, it's very dark but ultimately heartwarming, and it's a book you can read in one delicious weekend. But you will miss the characters if you do that when it finishes.
You almost want to space it out.
So try to hold back.
Yeah.
That's right. But she's a really exciting new voice in comedic writing, Meg Mason, and I think she's just getting started.
Yeah, this is her second novel, correct?
Second novel, and her first novel just escapes me. She also wrote a memoir.
Yeah, it's your memoir, Say It Again.
In a nice voice. That's it. Yes. No, she's fabulous. One to watch.
Yeah. I think that's something really interesting about those secondary characters, because I love the idea of, like, them they are part of the art world, but they're not that good at it.
They're really not.
You know, like,
no,
that's so
they're
much
really
more.
They're really good at throwing parties and inviting people to
and,
parties.
And, like, seeing, like, you know, they're so part of it, but actually what they do is, like, there's something that is so much more entertaining than someone who's, like, a great sculptor.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, well, they're good.
They're
like,
so invested in it. They're so invested
That's so wonderful.
Yeah, no.
Also,
great.
To answer before, I did some quick research. She did grow up in New Zealand.
So she did.
There is the New Zealand connection.
That's a beautiful link. Hell well, yeah. All the more reason to champion this book.
Definitely.
As per usual, thanks so much for coming, Abel.
Thank you for having me.
Really
lovely to see you.
Really appreciate it. If you want to pick up Sorrow and Bliss by, do you want to?
Meg Mason.
There you go. You can go to Scorpio Books and pick that up. And we were talking before, there is like too many books to name coming out in September.
So many books. I mean, I could name some if you want.
Sure, let's
How
rattle them off.
How are we going for time?
Oh,
okay.
Let's rattle them off.
All right. Trent Dalton, who published Boy Swallows Universe.
Oh, yes.
Which has got every medal you can imagine from the book world on the cover of it. He's
Wonderful.
Got a new one coming out, All Our Shimmering Skies.
Oh, yeah.
Which I was lucky enough to get my hands on. Ooh. And it is top-notch
lucky.
Quest story. So
Love that.
Get to that. Elena Ferrante, who wrote the Neapolitan Quartet, my brilliant friend.
Oh, yeah.
She has a new one coming out, which isn't part of that series, but it's still set in Naples. So if you devoured those books, you will love this one. Piranesi by Susanna Clarke, who wrote the hugely popular Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Oh, yeah.
Terry Pratchett. I'm sure that will ring
a bell. Everyone
knows
Terry Pratchett.
He's publishing Beyond the Grave. There is an unpublished.
Oh, my goodness.
An unpublished manuscript.
Terry Pratchett books in my
life.
Yeah,
well, this one's new, so you have to keep your eyes peeled for that. Otto Lengi, the King of Vegetarian Cooking from London, he has a new cookbook out called Flavour.
Oh,
which
lovely.
We might just be running a promotion for soon. Ooh. You might be able to get your hands on a free copy, so
Very
join
cool.
us on Facebook.
Definitely.
And you will see more about that.
Wonderful. Well, so many good books.
So many good books.
Good times to have. Thank you so much for coming in.
Anytime.
The song right here is Rave Smack Talk, Liam K. Swiggs remix by Kool-Aid.